Hey everybody, welcome to Big Blend Radio. You know the band Cream, right? I mean, come on, legendary. There is a new album that is out now through Quarto Valley Records, Heavenly Cream, an acoustic tribute to Cream. And you know, we hear a lot of tributes, but this one is epic. It's out November 3rd on digital CD and vinyl. We love the vinyl. I encourage you to go to PortoValleyRecords.com. But today we're excited to welcome composer, singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist Malcolm Bruce, yes, Jack's son, on the show, who is really a co-executive producer of the album. He's an arranger and performer on Heavenly Cream. And you can go to his website, malcolmbrucemusic.com, and all these links I talk about will be in the show notes. So welcome, Malcolm. How are you?
I'm very well, Lisa. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's great to be
You
here.
know, this is such a, you know, when I first heard, oh, an acoustic album of Cream, and then I started reading who's about it, you know, and then I was like, oh, just put it away and listen. Holy cow, like you did it.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, well,
You know what I mean?
it's been a long
Yeah.
time coming, as you can probably imagine. We started this process at the end of 2017, recorded in 2018. And there's a whole feature-length documentary that is a kind of making of documentary, including interviews and fly on the wall footage and all kinds of things. So it was a big process to get from the inception and the idea, which was Pete Brown, Cream lyricist. It was his idea. He sadly passed away earlier this year, but he came up with the idea and then sort of came to me and Rob Cass, the producer, and Mark Waters, who directed the documentary. And so just from that point, getting all the artists to agree to do it, and then schedules or schedules, I don't know, depending on which side of the
Hey,
pond.
we're universal, so we don't
Okay,
care.
schedules. And
Yeah.
then by the time we'd sort of completed it all, we hit the pandemic era,
Yeah.
and so everything kind of slowed down at that point. So it's been like 5 years, and we've lost
Oh, Ginger. Yeah,
Ginger.
Pete.
Bernie Marsden just passed away from,
Yeah.
and he was heavily involved in this project. So, and Pee Wee Ellis, the sax player from James Brown's band. So, quite a
Yeah,
few
that's
guys
right.
are not around. So it's sort of become poignant from that point of view. It's like a lovely historical document, with these people that we loved and knew, who are not around anymore, but we can sort of have this to remember them by, well, and including their incredible careers.
And it
So,
keeps
yeah.
it going. It keeps that torch burning. And I think that's also very important of these, you know, just legendary bands. And Cream wasn't around that long even, but they made such a mark,
Two and
you
a half
know?
years. Yeah, 2.5 years,
Yeah.
1966 to 1968, I
Yeah.
believe.
But the
So, yeah.
musicians were, you know,
I
obviously,
wasn't
but they
alive.
are. Yeah, but you know, I was a baby too. No, I wasn't a baby. No, I wasn't alive yet either. But you know, when I say about like Cream that sticks, like you know when you leave Cream
Cream that
in,
sticks.
yeah, well, Cream, right?
Whoa.
You always have that rim on the side, like in the Cream, you know, you've used the Cream, you go to wash it, and there's that angry little thing that sits there going, I'm not going away. And I feel like that was like their thought of when they formed the band saying, Cream, we're not going away, and we're at the top. And that's
Yes,
that, no
well,
matter
that
what.
my dad always kind of corrected people. The band wasn't called Cream; it was called The Cream originally.
Oh.
So yes, I think it was a slightly, tongue in cheek, but at the same time, they were seen as the top musicians of the time in London. They'd all been around the block, as it were, and played in the various bands. And so yes, they were the cream of the crop.
But yeah, to put an album out, like that's why I was on a tribute album. Okay, like hold your breath, you know, because it's like when people try to redo Janis Joplin, I'm like, stop it. You know what I mean? It's really hard. You know what I mean? It's
Yeah,
hard.
well, she was
And
had
then
such
there's
a
a
unique
few
voice.
people that can do it. I'll say Joss Stone is one. But when you get to this album, you've got like incredible talent. Obviously, you on it. But like Deborah Bonham, she was on our show a little, I think actually it was during the pandemic.
Okay.
Even she was on the show.
Yeah, she's
Deborah's
amazing.
incredible.
Yeah.
You know, John Bonham's sister, Jason's out there doing a whole bunch too. And Bobby Rush, holy cow, Bobby Rush on Spoonful?
Yes.
Seriously,
Well,
seriously,
we had to
that's
get him on,
amazing.
ask him to do like those that he does that and Sitting on Top of the World, I think. you know, those are kind of classic songs that he, you know, he would have been around those guys. I mean, I, you know, Bobby, what a history he's had in the business. So,
oh my gosh, he's like,
what
he's
a life.
Epic.
And he's still doing it. It's incredible. Winning,
he's a badass. Listen to him though. He's like such a badass. And when he comes on the album, he's like, I'm going to wake you all up. You know, here it is. And Deborah's voice is like perfect for this. I love the album, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't want to, compete with the original recording. Mm-mm. The original stuff was done in a certain way and it's kind of iconic and so unique. So, you know, an acoustic approach, acoustic version.
Made sense.
Yeah.
It made sense.
Still funky. It's not acoustic. I don't want people to get the wrong impression. It's not acoustic. Like, okay, here's an acoustic guitar and a bongo.
You're not in a coffee house.
No. I mean, I love folk music. I love all kind. I love singer songwriter, you know, mm-hmm. guitar and a voice and all of those things. But this is more just the premise that all the instruments are acoustic, but we've still got a drum kit and
it's a tribute. It really is. I think that's what it is about it being acoustic and the way it's been recorded and produced and just the right vocal. Everything is just perfect about it, that it has that soul of honor and tribute. But then they have Pete on there and then Ginger Baker. I mean, Ginger just recently passed. What I had, cause he is like a wild card, man. And I know he lived in Africa, which is where I was raised. It was in Kenya and South Africa. So,
oh, amazing.
You know, knowing that he lived out there and everything, I'm always like, yeah, he belongs there, man. He would get just that there's this extra freedom of life there. And just as a drummer, you can hear when, I mean, you, it's unmistakable when Ginger's playing, but what was it like working with him? Cause he's a wild card, man.
Yeah, I mean, Ginger was a complicated person. Obviously, I knew him a little bit over the years. And I've spent some time with him when he was just a very down to earth, normal person. When he married, a long, long time ago. I mean, I know Kudzi, his wife, who mm-hmm. is African and she's lovely. Mm-hmm. But they spent their time together the kind of latter years of his life. But years and years ago, when I was a kid, he'd married an American woman called Karen, and I remember meeting him in San Diego. I was a teenager. He came to visit me and his son Kofi, because I was working with Kofi. That was the first time I was working with him, and we were doing some demos in San Diego, and Ginger came around for the afternoon, and he was just really nice, like a down-to-earth, kind, talkative person, you know, not like the character that he's become known for, this kind of gruff, notoriously sort of rude person. He had that side to him as well, but I don't think that's who he really was. I think that was a sort of front or a kind of defense mechanism that he would put up. But you know, his whole connection with Africa is fascinating. I mean, he was one of the early people. I don't like this term world music, but he was one of the people that really was at that the beginning of collaborating with people from other cultures, you know.
Yeah, I mean, ethnic sounds.
You can talk about like George Harrison and Ravi Shankar or whatever. Mick Fleetwood. But, you know, but Ginger was with Fela Kuti
and that's huge.
He built the first multi-track recording studio in, I think it's in Nigeria, where Paul McCartney recorded at one point. So he was right in there, and he just, as you say, you know, I love the African people. Abbas Dodu, who's on this record, is an amazing guy. And he was Ginger's friend. I met him through Ginger. And he's just, you know, you just want to be around those people because they are spiritually expanded.
There's a good vibration.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, there's like a light that always just kind of shines. I can't explain it. There's a light and a smile the smiles. Africa is full of all kinds of other drama, and that's not what we're talking about. But there's this, through it all, there's this resilient smile that happens. And the music is phenomenal. And when Ginger moved there, I was like, he belongs. He'll get it because there's a freedom. And there's something very like, freeing, like he's calling you with his drumming, but very freeing, you know. And I think, I don't know, it's just magic that you have him on this recording, you know. It's got to be one of his last recordings.
I believe it is his final recording sessions. He came in for 2 days to Abbey Road, But, you know, you touched on something that the calling that African drumming, I suppose that's at the heart of it. It was actually about communicating something. Mm-hmm. And so you can actually play a rhythm that would have a message that would actually, it's a language, you know, and, mm-hmm. And I think all the great drummers in the Western sense understand that. I mean, I know Dennis Chambers a little bit. He's just an incredible drummer. And he talks about playing with melodies. You know, he's playing melodies and he's developing mm-hmm. those melodies. And I think you can hear that with Ginger too. It's just, it's orchestrated. It's complete within itself. It's not. And that's something that's really important to understand about Cream and what makes that band so unique. They weren't just, oh, okay, the bass player's playing the root note of the chord and he's standing a bit behind the guitarist and the guitarist is the most important guy and the drummer's like going, gum, gum, crack, gum, 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 crack. You know, it wasn't that. It was real music in the sense that they were all equal. And that's the magic of Cream. The three guys all filling equal spaces in the frequency spectrum, but also in the musical expression of an idea. It wasn't one person was not less than the other. And I think that's a rarity if that's ever happened before since in popular music.
I honestly think you hit on something too with about the drumming, about a calling and it being part of the melody, like what Ginger was doing. I actually think when you listen to Cream, you listen like nobody thinks of drums as a melody and you do. Like how do you remember a song and play it without having that emotion, without some kind of melody in your head, right? And the same thing, you know, on bass, a bass is still doing the melody. And when you listen to it all put together and the vocals, holy cow, right? It is like they were, I know, because it's like, oh, the bass is put and the bass, the foundation, the bass and the drum, right? But I think everybody was playing a melody, and that sounds weird to say, but I think everybody was playing a melody.
Of course, different instruments.
Everybody is, but yeah.
Yeah, different instruments do play a different role because of the frequency. You know, a heavier, lower frequency is going to move less quickly than a higher frequency. Mm-hmm. It's just the nature of sound, because the actual movement of the sound in space mm-hmm. transferring to a listener is at the frequency moves slower. I mean, So that you take that into account. But aside from that, you're playing melodies. And I think my father's background as a classical musician and as a jazz musician contributed to that, because he understood that we tend to rigidify our concepts of what music mm-hmm. is supposed to be, but it's so wide open. And there are so many possibilities. You know, people tend to say, oh, it's all been done before, but I think it's none of it's been done yet. We're just at the beginning of it. There's just so much to explore if we just get over ourselves. And, you know, part of that is, I suppose we could blame radio a little bit, and corporate outlooks sales, and, you know, but I mean, also we're the human races, like, children, you know, we're like toddlers, barely out of nappies, as we call them, diapers
everyone.
Yes, diapers. Yes, but you know, we're spiritually a little stunted. We've got a lot of growing to do, but it's not growing outwards, it's growing back, it's coming back to our true selves, you know, and rediscovering mm-hmm. innocence and playfulness and openness as a community, as a culture, as humanity, you know, and just putting all these kind of ridiculously superficial divisions to one side, which are just causing us problems all the time. You know, it's one race. It's the human race. There's one religion, you know, it's the physiology and its experience of divinity within us, you know, and all religions are saying the same thing, but they get caught up in this kind of superficial verbalization of something or scripture or whatever. I'm not putting any tradition down. I'm saying that we should respect all of it and stop shouting at each other and killing each other. And it's the same.
That's why you need music. And this rigidness is that. And I think going back to, like, when you go to Cream and you go back to these, you know, the roots of it, it makes you remember what dirt feels like versus plastic, right? And there's this beauty of it. And The fact is, like with your dad being having that jazz background, I think that's where some of the levitation, I always talk about levitation in music. You got to go up. And there's a psychedelic, I mean, they're known for the psychedelic vibe of it. Yet at the same time, Ginger's going, oh yeah, we're marching for war at the same time. And then I'll let you go. You know, he's like, I'm going to hold you captive and then I'm going to free you. And then you can, you know, levitate. And I think they kind of divide like, oh, you must do one and two and this and that. You know, I think your dad brought in, I mean, they all did in every single way of who they were and in their work, but there was this freedom to what they did that said, you know, we can have this, you know, we can tell the tales of Brave Ulysses in this way, you know. It was, you listen to the songs, they're all different with the blues, jazz, a little bit of psychedelic, well, a lot of psychedelia in there. You know, it's got a little bit of everything and it
Yeah.
they
Well, I mean,
basically
that's,
let us, we can do what we want.
yeah. I mean, we do, we need conformity and we need novelty, and those two things go hand in hand. But if we only have conformity, then we're not going
Oh,
anywhere. If we
boring.
only have
Jeez.
novelty, it's just complete anarchy, and not the best sense of that term. So I think we need a balance of elements. We need to come back to things, and in classical music, when we understand that process, we make a statement, and then we develop that statement, and then we might come back to that statement again. But we've been on a journey, and that journey is where the enlightenment is. That journey is where the growth. And maybe just on an abstract level, it doesn't have to be the lyric, the actual words conceptually taking us somewhere. It can be just an emotion or a sense of movement, moving somewhere. But if those things become blocked in and arbitrary, as in so much music, and there's brilliant music out there, and I love a great Britney Spears song as much as I like Stravinsky or what, everything has its value, but there's something about, as you say, music is the great teacher. It's this, and it's the thing that holds us. It's the thing that unifies us all. We can all,
Heartbeat.
we relate to the rhythm. We relate to, and levitation's a lovely word to use. The way that it can raise the vibration, and we experience that in a, as performers, we experience that. That's what we hope for when we're performing on stage. Okay, I feel like there's this magic in the atmosphere, but in the audience, it's the same thing. It's a shared experience. It isn't an us or them thing. It's let's share this levitation. Let's share this
Levitation.
transcendence.
I learned that from a drummer, Willie Kellogg. He was a drummer I used to play with out in San Diego, of all places. You were talking about
Oh,
San
cool.
Diego, and he used to play with Flying Burrito Brothers, Moby Grape, all
So
those
you must
guys. And
know the Belly Up, right?
the Belly Up Tavern. I saw John Mayall there. Yeah,
Oh,
speaking
wow.
of Cream and everything, yeah, I saw
Yeah.
him the last time I was there. Was I saw John Mayall? Yeah,
Okay.
so you've performed there, right?
Yes, a couple of times a long time ago. I'd like to go back there. It's a nice, is it, if it's still there?
It is. I
Nice,
just
nice little
interviewed
club.
someone who was about to perform there. Who was it? Anyway, someone really good, because I remember going, I want to go. And it is, I think, one of the best venues in Southern California, personally. Just
Yeah,
my own vibe,
absolutely. Yeah, well, I
you
mean,
know.
I've got my own record coming out next year, so
Yeah, we got to talk about that.
I'm planning to do some touring far and wide.
Oh,
So
good.
maybe I'll get to SoCal. Be
Yeah,
nice.
I hope so.
Been a
I
while.
hope so. With Heavenly Cream, by the way, that's the perfect title for it, right? As with
Yes.
all of your background, I know that you also worked on an album with Pete, and that'll be coming out soon as well, right? In
Yes,
2024.
that's his final, Pete's final solo record. That's called The Shadow Club. And that one has Eric Clapton guesting on the title track, which is really, really gorgeous what Eric did. He's not on this record, which kind of makes sense. I imagine he probably didn't want to cover himself in that sense,
Yeah. But
because
you
he's
got Joe
already done.
Bonamassa. You got
We
Joe on
got
there too.
Joe, we got Bernie
I mean, come on.
Marsden. We
Yeah.
got some great people, so that's not a problem. But yes, Pete's record, The Shadow Club, that's coming out on another label next year, and it's just great because we got the chance to Pete's health. He was really hanging on, and he was hopeful. And then I think that it got to that point where it does for many people, where the doctors say, "Well, there's not much more we can do for you,"
Oh.
and he kind of went quite quickly after that. But he was a trooper and an amazing guy, and We're all going to miss him terribly. You know, he was in my life, my whole life before
Yeah,
I
I
was,
bet.
before I was even conceived, he was in my life.
He was, and he sang to you in your mommy's belly. Yeah, you know, but
Yes.
it wasn't this his idea, this album.
Yes, totally his idea. Yeah, he was talking to the record label about another project, and they sort of collectively came up with this idea about making an acoustic tribute to Cream and also shooting a documentary to go along with it.
Awesome. Oh, I now the documentary, I'm gonna have to watch out for that. But
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you as a musician, because I mean, you do everything, and everyone in England, you know, Malcolm's got some shows coming up, so you got to keep up with him on his site. Everything's in the show notes. I wanted to ask you, for you as a musician working on this album with all these just amazing artists, and just did something change for you? Did you grow from this experience of doing this album, and then also kind of thinking about your dad's work and, you know, all of that?
Whoa. Yeah. I mean, I think,
Little heavy, just 10
no,
questions in one.
it's a brilliant question, but it's just hard to know how do I deal with that question? No, I think it's, I'm always growing, you know, I think I'm
You have
always
to, yeah.
growing all the time. But also I think a lot of that growth is about discovering the stillness within where all the creativity comes from. And, you know, in terms of my father, yeah, I mean, it was just a great privilege to be involved in this project with all these great people. Obviously, I'd worked with quite a few of them before, in different ways. But yes, it was very special. But I, you know, just getting inside that music. I mean, my mum co-wrote a couple of songs with Cream, my mum Janet. So we did a version of Sweet Wine with Ginger,
Oh yeah.
which she wrote, co-wrote with Ginger.
I didn't know she wrote that. That is one of my
Yeah.
favorites.
So
Wow.
her maiden name is Godfrey, so she's called Janet Godfrey,
Okay.
and she has written lyrics. And so yes, ka-ching, come on, buy the record so my mom gets the money. But no, it's just special because she's very humble. She doesn't go out there sort of claiming to be anybody, but she was just around them, and she wrote a couple of songs. She wrote Sleepy Time with my dad and Sweet Wine with Ginger. And I think she has a real talent for lyrics, you know? So it was really nice. Things like that make me feel good. You know,
Yeah.
it's all the sort of the tapestry of the background of what I grew up around and what my life is. But it's just, yeah, it is what my life is. I mean, it's a strange thing that, isn't it? Whatever we have, we have. And I guess some people hold on to it. Some people can be quite arrogant about it. But it's just, you know, my dad was complicated. You know, he was at once, he was a rock star who demanded to be treated that way. But then he was also an incredibly humble musician that didn't want to be treated that way. He wanted to be completely inside the process of creating art. So there were kind of different things pulling him in
But
various
it's so hard
directions.
because it's the in and out. Like, that's what we always talk about is doing magazine, and we're on the road full time with our magazines and podcasts, and
Amazing.
you're either out front, like in the audience, and we've done band work and stuff, or you're out in that creative process where just leave me the hell alone. I'm in that
Yeah.
bubble of creativity. And then all you have to like change light bulbs each time almost between places. And to be in between is really difficult. It's difficult to go do a show and then come home and do computer work or something, or,
Oof.
you know, accounting. You can't.
Yes.
That the energy doesn't work that way. You know what I mean?
Well,
So,
as Monty Python said, the chartered
oh.
accountant as well. I wanted to be a lion tamer. I know it's
Exactly.
a
There it
Monty
is.
Python
And
sketch,
that
but
hey, the Holy Grail's coming back out again. Yay.
oh, cool. Yeah, no, I mean it's you're absolutely right. I mean, and especially more and more these days, in terms of being a modern artist. You know, a contemporary artist, we're confronted with that thing. You know, we have to, apparently, we have to be able to do everything. We have to be a publicist. We have to self-finance everything. We have to be able to play and record, engineer, mix, master, promote while still having time to develop as an artist, to have time to write, to have something to say that's not just generic. to have life experience so that we know what we're trying to say, you know, to develop to the point where we're able, we have the facility to say something, you know. Otherwise, you know, that's part of the problem, is that not everybody, but there's a lot of stuff that just ends up being generic to fill the gap, fill the space. You know, sometimes I think people release too much music, and they should perhaps take a step back and have more life experience, so they're actually saying something instead of it just being a repetition of what's already gone before. But I mean, that's an arrogant thing to say, because I can only talk about myself and my own process. And I'm sure that changes over time. You know, sometimes you have a lot to say, and other times it's gestation and you have to kind of go and do other things in order to refresh your sense of what's actually going on.
You got to get material and you know, live, you know, and sometimes it's like up and down and emotional and, you know, whatever's going on in the world. With your dad, it's also going to be interesting too, having that, okay, here's my dad here, me doing music too. And everybody, we've done some interviews with, you know, the child stars, you know, and it's like, and I hate that term. God, that sucks. That's a terrible term. But it's like, yeah, I mean, it's in your blood. I mean, you know, publishing has been in my blood for years, and music, and yet it's different when it's on a big scale of everyone knows who your dad is. And then it's like, I'm going to do mine, but I want to be me, but I want to also tribute my dad. Like, isn't that a kind of a weird road to travel on?
Yeah, it's a delicate balance. And, you know, you're absolutely right. I think so far in my career, there's been a kind of expectation that I should do my dad's music because it's easier to sell it. And I've embraced that up to a point. But I think this next phase of my life is where I want to get my own identity out on a much bigger level.
Opera. You know, I just wanted to bring it up. I've been dying to go into that. I just wanted to, I couldn't wait. I wanted to, I'm like, you're doing something completely different, you know?
So yeah. I mean, I want to, you know, I've got this record that I'm working on that'll be out next year, Fake Humans and Real Dolls, which is it's a rock record or alternative rock. I don't really like to call it something, but it's a guitar based record. It's quite heavy in places, quite dynamic, but sort of quite a heavy sound. But I also am writing a jazz record that I want to record next year with some great musicians, and I'm writing opera as well. So yeah, I don't know. I just have always pursued all these different things, but they haven't quite come together for me yet. So I think this next phase is, how do I figure out how to get all of this stuff out so that it, you know, and see if it's valid, because I think it is, but it's just a funny game, isn't it? I mean, I think people from outside the business just who are receiving stuff, they don't necessarily understand that what that process is. You know, how do you get into the marketplace? How do people get to hear or see what you're doing? And you know, it's breaking the fourth wall a bit to talk about it, but in that sense, it's we're just oversaturated with stuff. There's stuff everywhere, and now we've got AI creating content, so we won't even we won't even know what is being created by humans or not. And then the people that are controlling the AI will argue that AI is just an extension of being human, which of course it is, but to what degree do we go?
One day we're going to have, here's the human stream and here's the AI stream. Which one do you want to listen to? It's going to be a choice. God, that's going to be so freaky weird if they give us that choice, right?
Yeah, well, or if we even will be able to tell the difference, or if it even becomes relevant anymore, because how all of these things are impacting human behavior. That's the interesting thing. Do people have the patience to listen to a whole record from beginning to end with 12 or 15 songs on it?
It
takes you on a journey. Right. But a lot of people, you know, switch on their phone and just scroll.
Oh my God.
Oh, I really like that. Those 12 seconds are cool. Oh, I'll go back to that later. Yeah. Oh, who's that artist? Oh, yeah, I might have heard of her. Oh, no. Okay. Next. You know, and it's
So that's what we tell everybody. It takes like 10 to 15 times for anyone to really even start to react to something because they're so busy. I mean, they used to say that about magazines, and going back to that old world that we've had, it would say like an advertiser, it's going to take 10 to 15 times before someone reacts to your ad. Well, now I think it's actually worse because of the click. You have to keep featuring until people go, oh, I think I've seen something about this, which could work for you, because they could go, oh, I've seen it, screw it.
But it's also just the habituation of, you know, particular sonic material or particular visual material. And once humans become habituated, when they see something that's novel or different or fragile or tender or whatever, they just kind of, they won't be able to handle it. They won't even understand it because the emotional content shifts and changes. It's a bit like auto-tune, which is a very useful thing up to a point, but then, but the thing of actually bending a note in the voice or an instrument, the actual, you know, perfect tuning, it's not meant to be in tune. You know, it's meant to move. The tuning is meant to move, and the rhythm is meant, you know, we're not meant to make music that's purely metronomic and on a grid. We're meant to, things speed
There's
up.
There's no levitation that way. There is no levitation that
it's
way.
It's all about levitation.
It is. But I think you're really right about this. I mean, it's like you've got to have that feeling and that soul. And I think what's important that you guys are doing this documentary that goes with the album, because it's like, yeah, the humans are doing it, you know, move over.
Yes.
We're here. And that, you know, that's an important thing. Do you see, doing more of that with your work too in the future, or taking stage like with operas? And, you know, that's the importance. Maybe through all of this, performance art will actually become a bigger deal. Like maybe that's the positive of the AI crap, you know?
I mean, I think it's, you know, I think it's probably like any technology, it's the intention that's important. We can embrace technology. It's really useful. I mean, us being able to connect and have a conversation that raises us up, we'll get something out of this, and hopefully other people will too. And we're using technology to do that. It's great. You know, I didn't like, get in my wooden boat and sort of sail across the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah. You didn't have to row across to Asheville, North Carolina today.
I'll
better be a good interview.
Like the carrier pigeon is going to send the message. Yeah, you'll see Malcolm in 4 months' time. He's on his way. You know, I mean, it's like, so technology.
Oh, my tea got cold now.
Oh, no. Well, that's
it's been 4 months.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. My water's all right. Still tepid.
yeah, refresh it, please.
But I mean, it's just, you know, so I don't think it's the technology that we should be blaming. I think it's the human intention behind it. Is it a positive intention or is it a negative intention? Is it a switched on, awakened intention, or is it a selfish, lower vibrational intention? You know, there's no point in here's something that means you don't have to use your brain anymore. You know, that's not good. But here's something that helps to automate something that was actually tedious and unnecessary and got in the way. And then maybe that's useful because it frees you up to just be more in the creative process. So I think it's a delicate balance moving forward, because obviously technology is not going away, and it's just how we use it. It's how we use it. Do we use it to compromise the creative act, or do we use it to support the creative act? And, you know, I guess, you know, if you spend decades practicing an instrument, you're going to improve technically in terms of being able to express something. But there are plenty of people that are in genius level of technical ability that can't improvise or
have no soul.
Yeah. Or there's something missing in the expression because they're not connected to the creative part of themselves. You can't mimic that. And it's not a technical thing. All the technical stuff in the world doesn't make great art. Although a great artist with technical ability, that suddenly becomes something even sometimes greater. But, you know, what is technical ability? I don't know.
Well, you know what? Oh, yeah, because you can do this at this time, or like speed, you know, play a guitar, you know, but does it have the soul in it anymore?
Yeah.
You know?
But also we've just become, you know, everything becomes predictable. And I think that's what I'm always searching for within myself, to not be predictable to myself. But that's, you know, in all humility, because, you know, it's not always, we don't always connect with that part. And so we have to be pretty strong about editing ourselves and being strong about saying, okay, I'm going to put that to one side. I'm going to try something else, or I'm going to try again. Or, you know, I think it's all very subjective, but we're living in an objective world. We're completely subjective living.
But art is supposed to to defy that, right? Art is supposed to push those boundaries. Art is the what's telling the truth of the times. I remember when iPads first started coming out, right? And seeing a performance and I got completely pissed off. I mean, and now I'm like a little bit better about it because I get it and, you know, done music and performed and everything. But I was always of the belief that you better know what you're doing up there. Like I never had lyrics up there unless I was trying out material in a coffee shop or something. And people, you could sit with your guitar and go ding, ding, ding. I'm trying this out and get away with it. And it was a rehearsal for me. Like that was, you know, and it wasn't a big gig, but you go to a performance and okay, with classical music, that's a whole other thing. And like intense, that's, but I would see bands glued to their iPads for the lyrics. And I absolutely lost it. I was just like, I know if singing, getting up on stage, if I screwed up the lyrics, because the only way I would remember lyrics is the story. And to me, if I screwed up the lyrics, it became this like, all right, you better get it out now. You better figure it out. Like you better get that story. And sometimes I would create a whole other verse just on stage, just like a whole new thing. So like technology Amazing, yeah. became this thing where I know they have like teleprompters and all this stuff. Fine. If you're a musician and you had like your set list on a piece of paper on the floor, or even your lyrics here and there, it was fine. Like some people would write stuff on their hands, but then here come the iPads. So you go see a performance and the band is, their heads are in their iPads and the music sucked because there was no life. There was no energy. Were you technically correct? Almost, but you couldn't really see your iPad at that time. So what was the point? So I'm sorry. I've been wanting to rant about that for a very long time.
No, but it's a really good point. But I guess there could be, depending on the situation.
There's times when you need it. I get
it. Well, no, but also there could be reasons, like economic reasons. Like, you know, it's if there's enough time to rehearse something, then you're absolutely right. There can be a fluid show. You don't need a set list because you know what comes after the next thing. And
yeah, the set
thing.
List is fine, but I mean, but a lot of the time, every song, like, come on.
Yeah, but a lot of the time, you know, bands, they throw something together at the last minute and then they learn
sense.
It as they go along, and then maybe by the 10th show they don't need, or 20th show or whatever. You know, it's just, it depends on the thing. I mean, ideally you spend enough time where you create an amazing show, and just like the theater, you know, you don't, to be or not to be, that is
click the button to the next page.
Scroll. That is the question. No, I mean, you know, obviously you have to have learned a script to be a great actor on stage.
Yeah.
And I think it should be the same with music. But if you're jumping from one thing to the next, and you know, and that's why notation was invented in classical music, so that people could read something and then the next day do something completely different the next day, and maybe even never have played it before, which is can be really interesting too, where you just sit down and actually play something from the page. But I it just depends on what.
But I'm okay with the paper.
I'm being devil's advocate.
No, it's cool because it was a rant. I said it the first time I saw it, but when a whole band's head is in it, that was insane to me.
Well, I mean, you don't want
it performing.
Yeah, to the detriment of actually performing.
If you have paper in front of you, for some reason, I'm fine with it. I'm okay. You can have paper. Because for somehow, there's something natural about it. I don't know what it is. It's just a weird thing. As soon as I saw that, I'm like, what is this? A band with their heads down and not connecting.
Well,
no connectivity.
When I was a kid, we had this whole movement of called shoegazers, right? I mean, you must have heard that term. It's like the old, like sort of indie rock, where they were all just down, you know, their head, their eyes, and gazing at their shoes. And
it was the beginning of grunge.
Beginning of grunge. Yeah. I mean, sure. I have to try and remember some of the names of the bands from the UK
when that was in South Africa, we called it termite music, because when the dancers would also be like in their hands up like little wings twirling around, but their heads down, and they'd bump into each other. I don't know what they were high on, but they were, and we would call it termite music. But anyway, no, you know, but it's, yeah, we have digressed from Cream, haven't we?
Oh, that's okay.
Cream to termites. But I think, but that's the thing. It's like a wake up call to these songs that broke some barriers of music. And that was such an interesting time frame, going back to that, of blues and the British invasion too. I mean, you've got to think about that too. And then, like, what was going on? And then, hey, we can go to different countries. I want to people to remember that. And now most Americans are going to Europe.
Most of what
Americans from musicians are going from here to England, to, you know, Holland, to, you know, they're going to Belgium. I mean, that's a whole other thing. You know, it used to be the British invasion coming here, and now it's swapped over. What is that?
Yeah. Well, it's complicated, isn't it? I mean, I think we, the British, borrowed American American culture, you know, in the 50s and the 60s. I mean, you know, talk to John, Paul, George and Ringo early on, and they would say, oh yeah, Little Richard, man, Chuck Berry, yeah. We want to wear leathers like James Dean, you know, or whatever it is, like just with fashion and music and black culture for the kind of white teenagers, because it was forbidden going even further back, you know, all of those things. And then suddenly could go back to the Beat Generation 10 years previous to that. So it was kind of radical in that sense. So we stole all of that. And, you know, Cream, for example, they took, you know, Willie Dixon, Spoonful, or you know, Albert King, or whoever that they loved, and especially Eric at the time, was absolutely a student of the blues. So he understood all of that. He would have known all those records and all of those artists. And, you know, my dad, the jazz thing that my dad had, and Ginger had, this kind of knowledge of jazz music, as well as, and then discovered the blues as well. So, and also like things like, you know, Motown and James Jamerson and all of those kinds of sounds that were around.
And the singing did this higher end part of it, where you had this really heavy bass and drums, right? And the singing kind of floated above and grabbed everything and swirled it. I think that's part of that levitation, was the way the voice just kind of, here, we're going to shift
that. My dad certainly discovered his voice, and, you know, over time, and it was just an amazing thing. I mean, I'm still doing that all the time. It's a daily exploration for me. I think that's the most incredible journey as a musician. If you are a vocalist, and I think all musicians should be vocalists to whatever degree, in the same way that, you know, an Indian Carnatic musician would learn in a certain way. You know, there are fundamentals. Or, you know, in the Western classical tradition, we would all have piano lessons, whether we were virtuoso concert pianists or not. It was a fundamental.
Just knowing, like, A, B, C, D, E, you know.
It's the language. Yeah, it's the building blocks of everything. And so, yeah, the voice, because there's, we now understand so much more about how the voice works. But I'm not sure, you know, yes, you can talk about bel canto, the going back centuries, the understanding of the physiology of how a voice works, because you can, you know, you can shout, but you can also place and use resonance, breath, relaxation is incredibly important. So it's a teacher learning to use the voice correctly, in the sense of how to actually make a sound that, as you say, levitates. It's not, you're not,
this is the levitation,
but you're not pushing the voice is not going out that way. The voice is it's resonating, it's
swirling.
It's here. It's
I think that's part of the psychedelic. But then the drum, like, no matter how you look at it, they were so cohesive, and that was it. I think it was so cohesive and melodic, but also took you to places you wouldn't have expected. And yeah, there was some blues in there, but the voice would come in and go, oh. And I mean, even the pitch, that sound, that is like a, you have to, you know, like, for me, I'm a very, like, you know, alto blues deep, but to go to that level, I can do it. But I'm like, I have to now push that and really think, is that, wow, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, you know? And some people have that naturally, and I think some people just have to develop it over time. Everyone can develop their voice, you know. But I think, again, it's also there is elements, you know, inhibition, cultural inhibition, but we could get quite deep with all of this stuff. But, you know, we have a particular way that we contract ourselves emotion, you know, psychologically and emotionally in the West. I'm going to generalize here, of course, but, you know, we tend to be in a kind of fight or flight response constantly because of stress. And I think that that can inhibit the awareness, the freedom, the liberation that's that truly great singing requires. Now, obviously, if I take enough drugs, maybe I'll just break through.
No, but no, okay. But now let's go back to Africa. Let's go back to Africa.
But that's what some people do to do that.
Yeah, but Africa. Now, if you listen to Africa singing, like in African singing, like especially the women and the men too are amazing. And and Native American music and Indian, I mean, even Indian singing and Mongolian throat singing. I mean, that is insane to me. I'm so the Tuvan throat singers.
Yes.
But when you, there's this freeing aspect and that's going, now they know about, you know, fight or flight. They know about survival, living on survival, but their music is part of their lifestyle and part of their communication. And it's connected with nature. So because they're so connected to nature, I think they understand about those calls that go up and out. And in singing, there's calls, there's calls to different people for different things, right?
Oh,
and
yeah,
it's like what we were talking about, Ginger with his drums. He's like, I'm calling you. Okay.
Yeah.
Now that I got you. Okay. Now we're going to swirl and then I'm going to push you out and then I'm bringing you back home, you know, and it's the same thing with vocals and in African drumming, vocals, anything that they're doing. It goes along with nature. And I think that in Western society, as we remove ourselves from nature, we're limiting ourselves in what we can do creatively with our own voice, with our instruments, and basically in life in general, really.
Yeah. I mean, we have become very mechanistic in our thinking and we're removed from, you know, I practice transcendental meditation. So,
sweet.
So I actually, and you know, it's every time I do it, it's a new journey, obviously, but generally speaking, we effortlessly sync the thinking to the source of thought, which is the quantum field, which we have discovered in science. So that deepest part of ourself is before anything that's been created or manifested. So, and that's the pure potential of everything, anything that's possible is there vibrating in this unmanifest form. And we can experience that at the root of the self. It's called pure awareness. That's one way of calling it, but it's the same as the quantum field. So in the West, we are beginning to realize, oh, we can actually, God is scientifically verifiable subjectively in consciousness. And then there's that realization that all there is consciousness. Consciousness, everything arises in consciousness, including the idea of an individual, of three-dimensional space, of having to do something, of other people, of objects, of time. All of that's arising in pure awareness. So once that's realized, there can be a letting go. It's like a death of the ego in a way, but it doesn't stop, you know, it doesn't stop us acting and being. It just makes it lighter. We're not having to add layers of I'm me and I've got to prove myself and I've got to be this thing. And I think that's what you're saying. Maybe some of those cultures are, they're not so caught up in having to maintain this linearity and sense of self and proving that we are something. It's less of that and more just spontaneous. And, you know, the fight or flight response, for example, is important. It's essential because if something's coming to kill us, we've got to run away or get out the way.
But we don't have to live in it.
Exactly.
But we've become very cosmetic, you know.
We're not connected to that part of ourselves. So
yeah, you know. And the meditation I think is really fascinating that you do that. So many musicians do and artists and it's, we've done interviews on it and I know it was Dr. Greenbaum and he wrote a book, Super Brain or Super Mind. I mean, this was about 10 years ago, I think we did this interview. And it's fascinating because and I have the book in my storage unit. I told you we travel full time, but I have this book because I thought it's mind breaking because it is scientifically proven fact. And they looked at, you know, cause it took time to do all these tests over years to be able to verify people's brains over time. And they found the brain waves and brain structure. You do become a super brain through transcendental meditation. And all meditation is good, but there is a difference between meditation regular and is different.
TM is unique, but it's not unique. In its various cultures will express it differently, but
yeah.
what has to happen is touching that ground state of being,
and each is different for each person, right?
Well, it's the same. It's the being with a big B, or the self with a big S, is all there is. And it's like Maharishi, who brought this mm-hmm. knowledge to the West, although his teacher, who is called Gurudev, he was a Shankaracharya of Jyoti and Nat, which is the north part of India, one of the seats of learning, initially formed by a guy called Adi Shankara. So it's all based on the Vedic Vedanta mm-hmm. knowledge, non-duality. But Maharishi would describe it as waves on the ocean. So you've got an ocean, it's all one
yeah, right.
piece of water, but little waves are coming up like that, and they're individual waves, but at the root of it, it's one thing. And so, you know what, that's when once we start acclimatizing to that deepest part of ourselves, we're going beyond the hierarchy of thought, we're going to the source of thought, then we're transcending the source of thought.
And so levitation
and music can do that for us, and you know that's also a way of accessing it, but this is a more systematic way. It's effortless, and I don't think it's owned by any culture or religious thing. I mean, you can mm-hmm. Christians called it the cloud of unknowing in the Middle Ages. There were Christian mystics that described the same thing. It's described in poetry. I'm sure the whirling dervishes or whoever it is, that it's accessing that part of the self, which is the intelligence. It's pure intelligence. It's pure wakefulness. And yes, I mean, scientifically, we could talk about seven stages of consciousness, and that they are completely separate from each other in the sense that the reality that we experience, for instance, if you're in the dream state, you can have this dream and all these crazy things happen. You're flying through the air. And
yay, I like those.
Every person that you've ever met, kind of comes into all your ex-girlfriends or whatever, you know, they're, wait a minute, why are you here?
Yeah.
But you don't quite look the same. Like, so, you know, like, I don't
been
know.
Been a few years, hasn't it? No.
Yeah. No, but like all of that stuff can appear in consciousness in the dream state, but it's not, it's completely separate from what we might term the waking state. But then cosmic consciousness is when, as described in this system, is when that pure level of awareness starts to become infused with the waking state. So you start seeing things completely different. And then it continues to grow, where you start seeing the divine presence or the intelligence of the physical manifestation of the universe. You see it in everything. So, and then the self, the individual self, begins to fall away, or the realization that there isn't an individual, that there is only experience happening to itself. And that can include an individual arising in awareness with like, I like blue and I like Smarties. I like M&Ms, but not the red
ones. I like Smarties.
Oh, okay. I don't, I mean, I'm pure vegan, no sweeties for me.
You have honey. Dark chocolate. You're allowed to have dark chocolate.
I love dark chocolate. But yes, I mean, none of that disappears, but there is within it, it's that realization that only one thing is happening. It's not owned by Malcolm, although it appears to be Malcolm, an individual with a sense of physicality, of negotiating a time space continuing, having to pay his rent or buy food down the shop or whatever. But all those things are just kind of happening within awareness. It's beautiful. So it's called liberation, because we're liberated from having to hold on to ourselves. And I think that again, it's that holding, it's that I am a person and I better Do I look
We're not living in a cave anymore.
If I let my breath go, will I look fat? Okay, I'm not going to, you know, whatever.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's the thing. And then if you want to lose weight, go vegan. Seriously, it's true. It's very healthy. But I go back to, this is when it was transcendental meditation, it goes back to, like you're saying, the Vedics, and that's what Ayurveda did too. And Ayurveda, again, is all about being in that connection with nature. And if you don't have that universal connection, and people will do it through drugs, like you were saying, even with the singing, people are doing ayahuasca to get off drugs. I'm going, maybe transcendental meditation might be better. I don't know. But puking in a bucket doesn't sound like fun to me. in the middle of the jungle, I want my awareness at that point. Thank you.
But we've become so caught up in, we live.
Maybe it is cool. I'm not going against it. I'm just saying, for me, I don't want to.
I think it seems to be at the moment in the way things appear, it seems to be a bit of a rite of passage at certain young age group. People will want to go through that. But, then in the US, I guess pot has become decriminalized in many states. So it's become normalized. And
I don't care about. I think it.
Yeah, that's different, maybe, or it's a bit like alcohol or whatever. I think it has to be a personal choice. But my experience of it is that meditation can open up the channels and open up the neurophysiology to allow all. Drug experiences, the bliss that we get from taking stimulants pales in comparison to the bliss. Consciousness that can emerge over time when we just start acclimatizing to that level of where bliss is all there is. And so we end up being pure bliss. We end up being like every movement is joyful. Every experience becomes pure joy. And there's nothing greater or deeper than that experience, because you become the totality of experience. You're not just this little narrow thing with a prejudice. Mm-hmm. You become one with everything. With everything.
I know. Listen. Now we're going all hippie, man. That's cool. We're levitating for sure. But now, with all of this, does it boost your creativity? Because like they were saying with the Beatles, they're taking acid and, all of that to open and expand your mind. And I think it's going to do some. I've never taken acid. I don't know, but I'm not against, other things. I'm not, as long as you don't hurt yourself or hurt somebody and become addicted and hurt yourself or people or animals or nature, just don't, no hurt. Okay. No addiction and hurt.
But I think it's,
and that's the thing.
It's the judgment. It's intrinsic in our culture to make value judgments all the time. But in self-realization, it's realized that everything is as it is. It's not because it should be, or there's a reason.
Even hurt, like what I'm saying, like hurt as
hurt,
part of it.
But hurt can be observed from a point of view of non-attachment, and then it's more likely to dissipate. Because hurt is perpetuated by the belief in it. And I'm not saying that hurt, from a totally extreme point of view, somebody that's in their last few days of cancer, who's dying, can still identify with the observational part of the self, which liberates them from that pain. That pain still appears, but it doesn't belong to anyone anymore. Mm-hmm. It becomes just another object and experience. And it's a very, very extreme version. But that's it. That's truth. The truth is there is a part of us that's untouched by any of the content in experience, because it is experience. It's the experiencer itself. It's the awareness within which experience happens. And so, and that is the true self. The true self is not the guy that goes, I don't like you because you said you called my friend, you knocked over my drink in the pub or whatever. It's like all of that stuff appears. But interestingly, and also this is quite a Christian concept, which I think about. I don't call myself a Christian, but I think about this concept quite a lot at the moment, which is, what we hold in our heart is directly reflected in our experience. So if I turn up if I turn up in a situation and I think that person's not going to like me, then there's, even on a physiological
level, you've already put something out there.
I'm putting it out there, and it's not just a hippie thing. It's like I'm holding my breath. I'm cautious. My musculature is tightening. And that person, even on a subconscious level, because most communication is not verbal and it's not conscious, they're going to be like, oh, there's something about that guy. He doesn't, you know, he's a bit tight. There's a tightness around that person. So I'm going to respond by being tight. And then suddenly the not liking or not being open and responsive is manifest by simply by my intention. And so with meditation, I don't know what it's like for anyone else, because there isn't anyone else. It's
at the same time, when you're writing, do you feel, and going to that communication, like in performing, it's like how you feel going on stage. Like you have to leave your baggage behind. Like that was, you know, maybe you didn't pay your rent and your landlord's knocking on your door right now and you're going, I'm trying to make the money now, you know, but you're on stage.
Give me a week, man.
Yeah, give me a week and I'm going to Mexico. Screw you. No, you're on stage. You're performing and you can't leave that. You've got to kind of go, you've got to, it's almost like go into different bubbles and be, but also be true and honest. Like if you're having those negative thoughts, you've got to, in your own way, kind of twirl them around, because otherwise you're going to have a really crummy performance. Like if you know what I mean? If you're like in a town you don't want to perform in and you get there, but then you're like, oh my gosh, I don't want to be here. And then the audience is going to know if you don't want to be there, no matter what you say or do. They're going to know.
Well, I mean, that's,
you have to change it.
We have to lose, as you said before, you know, if you're staring down at your iPad, you're not going to be able to let go of yourself and to, you know, it's, I guess the, one way of expressing it is it's like a Zen state, you know, there is no separation, but I mean, you can also talk about it in the Vedic or the Vedantic way, you know, the knower, the object of knowing and the process of knowing are one thing. It's like a trio or a trinity, you know, within that experience, and there's no separation, but at certain levels of consciousness it will seem separate. And so yes, the greatest performance is when all of that disappears and all that's happening is the performance is happening and there isn't a person doing it. There's an observational aspect to it, but even more radical than that, at the best, the times in my life where I've experienced the most success, whatever that means to me subjectively, is when I've been so joyful that the world responds to that joy by giving me, by fulfilling my desires. And the distance between having a desire and the fulfillment of that desire shortens sometimes to just the desire happens, the fulfillment happens. And it's because I get out the way with all my neuroses and hang-ups and insecurities. Suddenly that's like, and it is like the ultimate manifestation technique, if you want to call it like that. It's just literally getting in the moment, letting go, and just embrace, just
creativity, though. That is the ultimate in creativity, where we allow ourselves to take that extra step. You know, in music and in writing lyrics or something, or writing an article or whatever, you want to really say something, and then maybe you have to edit it to make it the story be better, right? To have more connectivity or make it rhyme, you know, I know we have to do that, but that's part of storytelling. But if you're going to push the envelope on something, if you let your little nasty mind go, no one's done it like that. They're not going to like it. Oh, the label's not going to like it. Then you wouldn't have Cream. You wouldn't have your work. You know, you wouldn't have all these amazing musicians and artists and writers around the world if they didn't push the envelope. And pushing the envelope is good. We learn the rules. Then we know how to break them and distort them into ways. But we know the groundwork. Yeah, there's these certain things in music we need to learn. Sometimes some people don't. They should just go the way they are. Everybody's a little different, too.
Yeah, but I think can also frame it as trauma. I mean, you know, we're all of us, every appearance of a human being has the complete potential, infinite potential of creative natural law within us. And, but we are we are conditioned, we're habituated throughout our lives from a very, well, the first 6 months to 2 years is probably the most important in terms of forming the personality, forming the belief system, etc. And so we tend to be traumatized in the truest sense of the word, and then we stop growing. We lose touch with, as you say, you know, hey, I am, can do anything. And it's not an arrogance, it's confidence. It's the subtle difference, or not so subtle difference.
Because like, we stumble over things. We think we can run down the street. We fall down, then we go, well, I fell down, so I'm never going to run down that street again.
Yeah, but if it's you look at a toddler, fault. You look at a toddler, they fall down. Over and they smile and they laugh, ah, I'm getting up, I'm climbing up. Yeah, you know, fall over
it's
again.
It's our teenage years. Is it our teenage years where we become like this? You know,
I think that's, yeah, I think secondary, what do you guys call, like from the age of 10?
I don't know.
10 or 11 when the next, not primary school, but the next school.
I have no clue.
Middle school, or I don't know. I have.
And I went to 16 schools around the world. I have no clue.
Oh my goodness.
But I went through matric, and I don't think they have matric here. I didn't graduate. I didn't go to school here, so I have no clue.
Yeah, we call it secondary school in the UK. And I think that's when, you know, in primary school, it's like, yeah, run around and draw some drawings with crayons. Yeah. And be free. And then by secondary school, okay, sit there, shut up, don't do as you're told.
Don't chew on crayons. Didn't you learn that before?
Yes, don't.
You'll have multicolored poo.
No. Exactly. But I want multicolored. No, you're not allowed to have multicolored.
I do.
You do. Well, that's because you have a rainbow diet.
And yes, that's right. I'm wearing the wrong clothes today. I should be in my hippie gear. Yeah.
It's inside you. It's radiating
it's coming.
From within.
It'll come back. It'll come back. Once you've eaten the crayons, it'll always be there for you for the rest of your life. Well, good. That's a good way to close our conversation. Rainbow poo with crayons. But it's just been
and
a delightful
bombshell.
Chat.
Yes.
I know on that. Yeah. And it did become a bombshell because it's mostly plastic. It's a fantastic plastic. Good. Oh, that's good. It's good for all of us, right? Was your dad into meditation?
No, he wasn't really. He struggled with addiction throughout much of his life. It's very switched on, very aware. And yeah, I mean, we did talk quite extensively. He'd read like Yogananda's book, Autobiography of a Yogi, and he did have interest in Eastern traditions, but I think he then got caught up more and more with addiction, you know. It's just a product of his culture. We talked about it a lot, actually, over the years. But he also had an innate intelligence, but also I may never figure out how it was with my father, because he's sort of anomalous to, like, I have to go to bed early. I get up, I do a coffee enema. I then do Abhyanga.
No, by the way, that means he has no crayon poo.
Yeah, exactly. Then I do like, you know, warm sesame oil massage. Then I do 30 minutes.
Yeah,
I do 30 minutes of yoga. Then I meditate for 20 minutes. Then I rest. Then I get on with my day. And then I do the same thing in the afternoon. So twice a day, like a program, a routine.
Right.
And from that regular routine, everything just completely opens up for me. And it's just astonishing. And I feel like I'm still at the very beginning of that journey of unfolding what my potential is. I mean, forget, you know, creativity and writing operas and all that. Just even as a person, being able to communicate with other people, giving love, giving, receiving on a human level. All of that stuff is just so beautiful. And I think, so I'm exploring all that. Whereas my dad, it was like a whole different animal, you know, but he still was able to achieve so much. And his creativity was so great. So I don't know whether it was just because of who he was, you know, that's just the way he was built.
But it's about, I think, drugs, alcohol. Like, I love my wine, and, you know, there's things in life that are, you know, not always good for you. But, and I think back into the culture, like when I was growing up, cigarette smoking was only then really starting to become the big no-no, you know?
Well, I did that for years. I smoked for years, you know.
Yeah. And it was bad, and that made it really cool for us kids, you know, and Yeah, no, mom, I'm not smoking, and there's cigarette smoke coming out behind my head with my cigarette behind my back, you know, all of that stuff. But then you learn, like, and it was actually Ayurveda that helped me get past that. But I think it's all about the same thing. It's almost switching gears. I think drugs and alcohol and different addictions come in different things. It could be chocolate cake. It could be anything. It's about switching gears. It's about feeling good. It is about chasing a high. And meditation and having that crystal clarity that you're talking about, there's a clarity and a joy that comes from that. And that also happens when people get past the addiction stage in recovery, and everything starts to come back when you're truly alive and aware. And addiction, drugs and alcohol are like the fake ones, you know, same here. But
It's
it's
the
the same
higher.
thing in a weird way.
It
But you,
absolutely is. Yeah.
it's like a
But
sugar
you're
high.
drawn by that. Yeah. I mean, there's many things to be gained from smoking weed or drinking wine or probably all
You're
drugs, I would
never taking
imagine.
my wine away. That's never happening. But
All
I
right.
could not
But we
drink
might
so much
swap them. We
wine.
might go like swap and give
No,
you
but listen,
an
when I was
organic
vegan,
one or something.
I, oh yeah, no, I'm all into that. And vegan wines, by the way, do that. But
Oh, cool.
because I'm allergic to fish, and they put fish stuff in no.
Well, like
But
they
then when I
put
was
fish jeans
vegan,
in tomatoes as well sometimes, I think.
you oh, is that why I don't like tomatoes? Huh. But the vegan thing, that was interesting, and you couldn't drink that much wine. So I had to really get healthy, because you can have one glass of wine, your body's so clean that you have one glass of wine, and you're like, well, maybe I will sit down, you
Well, I've
know.
been vegan for many years now, and although I do still have honey and occasionally eggs,
Oh
but I
yeah.
no meat or fish or anything like that. And no dairy as well. And I
Oh,
just
that helps your
great.
body. Yeah, that helps your body for sure, for sure. But
But as I say,
man,
my dad was very different. He
it's that high
lived a
though.
very different kind of life. And yes, I mean, in Ayurveda, you call it, sattvic, tamas, rajas, so if you eat a steak, it gives you raja energy, which is like a kingly, that
Yeah,
translates as like, it's a particular kind of gross strength. But, and tamas obviously means something that's decaying. Sattva is pure. And so but we need all three of those energies. They cycle. It's the cycle of birth and death. It's the cycle of life. So we do need all those energies, but then there's a balance of all that stuff. So yes, a steak and a good line of cocaine will get you moving in the morning, right? But it's also a gross level of energy compared to meditating and doing Panchakarma or eating vegan or whatever. So yeah, all of that stuff is really interesting.
And we've really done good on all kinds of topics today. But you know, I just wanted to say this in closing. You were talking about ego and how big and small it is. And my mind went to like the different deities in Hinduism, and like you'll go to Lakshmi for certain things, and you know, all these. And it was for these different, like not embodiment, but like to, I need this power, this for this reason. If I'm going to war, I'm going to call up this one, you know. So I was thinking that about, you know, egoism, and when you were talking earlier, and thinking, if we looked at all these little things that we have as human beings, these little things that make us up, and we're a little out of balance with egoism in the world, right? So if you just looked at ego and said, you know, I think it's time for you to go for a nap. Okay. Then you realize, I need my positive ego right now for a little bit of confidence to go and break that creative barrier or whatever it is. So it's like almost like lighting a little match and saying, okay, you can come out now, come out. Now you get to come here for a little bit. We're all, you know, family. We're all related. We're all one. So come out and play for a little bit. Now, oh, you've done it. Go to bed now.
I mean, I think ego is essential, in the sense that, it should be embraced. It can be
I
embraced.
agree.
It's not, it's beautiful to have confidence and to manifest things, to make things happen. Without ego, we can't go and get a partner, or we can't
Yeah.
get out of bed in the morning because we feel like it's not
Right.
worth it or something. And life is to be lived. It's not, I'm not really a believer in denial of anything, but for whatever reason, my experience is that a spiritual practice like yoga, it allows me to live more fully. It's not a denial. And, you know, Maharishi, for example, he spoke of different people. He spoke of what he called householders. And of course, that whole tradition talks about that. Look, you can still become enlightened, but live, be married and live a full life and enjoy yourself and have desire. Desire is good. You know, desire is a motivator in life. You know, it's great to feel sexy and to be wanted and to want. And it's great to desire the fruits of this world, you know, but not to the degree that you're willing to hurt other people.
Right. That's what I was saying about like with addictions.
That's like narcissism, where you only see yourself in the sense that you're not allowing other people to coexist with you.
And we all have a list of examples of narcissism these days.
Oh, yes, we do.
Thank God for music.
That's a whole other 4-hour podcast.
Yeah, I know. But that's why we have music, because like sometimes turn off the TV, listen to some music, go to your happy place. And I think music is part of that. I think music is part of that spiritual realm. So like you do TM, you know, maybe people smoke weed, drink, whatever. But music is part of that, that everyone can agree on. When you're having a bad day, you better play some music. It'll help switch gears.
Whatever makes it happen. It's falling between the gaps of thought. Between the gap of every thought is transcendence. It's called transcendence. It doesn't matter whether it's
from
the Vedic tradition or Christianity or Islam or whatever, or don't even frame it. You know, that's what those people in India that practice this tradition. Yes, there are all of these things. There's the Gayatri mantra, which is beautiful, and that's to the mother, to the spirit of the feminine, you know, or there's, you know, Kamdev, which is like, it makes you very sexy and appealing to other people. If you want to attract somebody, you can do a mantra and it will actually create a certain vibration that makes you quiet.
It is,
you know,
it is, or, because, but that's the calling. It's the calling again. We're going right back to that. And,
but also like you might want to be attractive to other people because then you get to give in a certain way that's just so beautiful, like to be able to give to somebody. And because and that's another selfish, egotistical act, because to give is to receive. To give makes me feel good about.
Okay. But music, think about the origins of music wasn't to be sold as albums, right? If you go back to it, it was a form of communication. And if you were doing a specific dance, it was like, you know, hey, I'm trying to get your attention, just like birds do dances, the mating calls. That's what it was all about. I mean, sex and music is one, really. And also messaging.
Rocking and rolling, baby.
Yes. Yes. You know, and then you've got that's the levitation. Or you could be the drunk person at the end of the show doing the squat dance that gets right down on the floor and falls down and can't get back up.
There's always that one guy. You feel a bit uncomfortable watching him dance completely out of time, but when everyone else has gone home, he's still there. He's like the most.
He's still there. Or the person with the tambourine. Never give the tambourine to the audience. Don't ever do it. It's the worst thing. I always rant about this.
Or the girlfriend.
Oh God, no, no, no. Thank you so much for such a fun conversation. You know, we are Big Blend for everything, because we don't have barriers about what we talk about. So it's been a real pleasure. Everyone, QuartoValleyRecords.com. The album is out November 3rd, again called Heavenly Cream, an acoustic tribute to Cream. And also keep up with Malcolm at MalcolmBruceMusic.com. He's got new music coming out next year and also shows, and especially in England. So you want to keep up with them there. And of course, we're at BigBlendRadio.com. All these links are in show notes. But I've got to give a shout out to our friends over at The Lion and The Rose Bed and Breakfast in Asheville, North Carolina. They're our sponsors of today's show with Lion and Rose. See, I thought that kind of went well, seeing that, you know, Ginger was in Africa and they've been all over Africa too, the innkeepers. So lion-rose.com for that. And they welcome musicians. So, all right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa. Really, really nice to meet you, and hopefully chat again soon.
Absolutely. Keep us posted. I want to hear the opera too. I want to hear all the new albums. We're all ready. All right.
Thank you. Thanks. Have a good one.
You too.